Welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth, and boy, oh boy, what a jam-packed show. Now, if you look at the name of this, it says it's Ginger Clown, which is a really horrible movie from like 2013 that has Michael Winslow and Tim Curry and whatnot. It's a bizarre film. And yes, we do chat about it just a little bit, but mostly this is the Michael Winslow episode. He goes nuts. He's a sound factory and he physically can't stop making noises. What a talent. Boy, oh boy, are you guys in for a treat. But hey, if you're a regular listener of the show, or if this is your first time and you haven't done so already, go ahead and hop on the Apple Podcasts, the Stitcher, the Podbean, or whatever platform you listen to us on. Leave us a 5-star rating, some fun comments. Helps us out tremendously. Costs you nothing. It means the world to us. So without further ado, get strapped in. Turn that volume up to 11. And get ready for Ginger Clown.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
The man, the myth, the legend, Michael Winslow.
Hey.
Hey, what's up, brother? How are you? It's been, it feels like it's been an hour.
I had to get access from Sneary. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I know how it rolls. I know you have an advanced computer system similar to a HAL 9000, you know? That's
yeah,
how you live
it's
your life.
It's a noisy man 0058.
Ooh. That's a... I'm sorry. This is you obviously have met me. I'm Eric, but this is my sweet demented brother Jeremy right here, the bald gentleman.
And hey, Jeremy, how's and it
that,
going?
Hi, you are hey. A god to me.
Good to see you, man. Relax. Hey, he got Yoda right behind him.
This is what podcasting has paid off, just to even see you or meet you. So
he got Yoda right behind him.
Yeah, he does. He does. He's
that's the baby Yoda that is. I don't even know what race he is. He's like the Yoda race.
Yeah.
So.
I think he is of. Question that is good.
part of the count. There was another Yoda woman, Yoda, on the council. So I think Yoda got kind of maybe a little sum from his girl on the council.
Yeah,
it makes you wonder. So we don't know what he is. He's a Yoda, but we don't know what a Yoda is. That's a very good question. So anybody out there that's into the Star Wars canon, maybe y'all can answer that question, because that'd be a good question.
Yeah.
What species is Yoda?
I had always thought he was I think a Yoda is what happens when Miss, like, that's the baby that Miss Piggy gave birth to after like banging Kermit the Frog.
Oh, I'm sure Miss Piggy and her crew is in that galaxy.
Yes. Yeah.
And it sounds like Miss Piggy and Kermit, or maybe Fozzie. So
yes.
No, that's a whole other galaxy too. Because remember Fozzie's got his own thing. You know, remember Fozzie's. You know, I would assume where Fozzie comes from, they listen to a lot of reggae music.
Yeah.
He wears a hat, you know.
Mr. Winslow, have you ever rubbed shoulders with Frank Oz?
Well, hey, listen, before we get all into that, why don't we just start the show? Welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm your host. I'm here every week. I'm joined by my brother, Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, say something real quick.
I'm totally starstruck.
Okay, well, shut up.
Cry.
Enough of your fucking fandom. And then we're also joined by the very lovely, the very talented Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you doing, love?
I'm good, Daddy.
Thank you.
Hey, Ash, how you doing?
It's wonderful to meet you. I'm fantastic. Thank you, Michael.
Absolutely. I'm looking behind me because I've been watching a lot of Marie Kondo lately. And it's working. It's working. I've been using it piece by piece. I'm starting to understand why she wants you to do clothing first, and it's just reminding me that you know what? What's up? You know what?
Yeah, hell yeah.
My closet is filled with clothes that no longer fit because of quarantine, so.
It's okay. Yeah. We will find a use for them.
When the world opens back up, I promise, we'll get those clothes back on you, or we'll burn them and make you, we'll knit them together to make you new clothes.
And that's right. We will repurpose them. We're going to remodel, and we're going to do what Marie said.
See, I look at that sweater that fit you back in 2017, and I say, you know what? You marry that fucking blue one with that pink one, sew them together, you can gain another 20, 30 pounds.
I don't even know where my sweaters are, but I do have my wigs. I do got my wigs, though. What's up, girl? I got my wigs, though, because in my show, I play Tina Turner's sister, Tuna.
Tuna Turner.
Now, I know that sounds fishy. But anyway, on with the show.
Oh, thank you. Well, that other voice, obviously, that you guys have heard is Mr. Michael Winslow himself. Thank you for joining us on the floor. The human noisemaker. Gosh, I love it.
Did we want to play his opening theme music?
Oh, so my sweet brother Jeremy that you've heard here, Mr. Winslow, he wrote you a special theme song we'd like to share with you. So without further ado, here's a special song that Jeremy wrote for you.
So first time hearing on this, you know what? Drop this. Drop the beat. Drop it.
Michael Winslow. Man on 10,000 sound effects or more. Michael Winslow. Don't feed him after midnight or he'll change. Michael Winslow. Full embodiment of Jimi Hendrix without a guitar. Michael Winslow. Knows more karate than Neo in the Matrix. Look out, here he comes. He's gonna destroy us all. Michael Winslow. Could outbeatbox the actual human beatbox. Michael Winslow controls the machines of Skynet and the future. His future's not fully set. He's gonna make a comeback that dwarfs John Travolta.
Oh no, he's gonna eat us!
There you go. That was the Michael Winslow song. We kick off the show with that.
He controls Skynet.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true.
Thank you so very much. I I've been holding on these things for 12 years, and I never had to use one until just now. So, like your closet, I got stuff that I can't show you.
Well, Michael, I love this already.
So yeah, me and Michael just did the last two episodes of Laugh Finder with us, which is really fun. And now you see,
are you all still on the air?
No, we're still kicking, buddy. We're still kicking.
Any fines have been issued?
No, not yet. Give it time, good. Though. We'll all be canceled, but that just means you can't go on Twitter.
Yet.
So, and who cares about that? You know, that place is just a steaming trash heap of vileness. You don't need that smoke. You're ready. You're Michael Winslow. You're above Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, you know, I'm remodeling all my sets, so this is my leather set, and so you know, because Calico Corners is going out of business, you know, all of them are going out of business apparently. So there's a lot of fabric on sale. So I got a lot of stuff that I've been experimenting with. So for now, when you see me, there's gonna be all kinds of different stuff, and I got stuff for different moods. I mean, I got a Mikado one, you know, where I can just go.
Oh, that's...
Oh, Daniel's on mute, too much TV. whereas you got a time tunnel set, which is cool as hell, man.
Yeah,
you,
man.
You got the time tunnel. Go kick your ass.
I like that. You do probably do a mean, what is it, the bad guy from Inspector Gadget voice, right? That's
Yeah. What is that years and years and years ago I read for that and they didn't take me. But I think they liked the voice so much they found someone that was close.
Yeah, because I heard it and as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, is that Michael Winslow? And I just didn't know.
Yeah, no, I think they got somebody cheaper.
How does that work though? Have you ever had that kind of situation where you go to read for a part and you nail it and then you just hear somebody who does the exact same thing that they got?
That's all happens all the time.
Well, what do you do in that situation? What happens then? Like, what do you do? I mean, all you can say is, hey, that's my voice. And you're like, prove it. And you're like, I can literally do every voice. So, like,
well, believe me, for each case, when you have one of those Hollywood histories, when you grow up around it, mm-hmm. and you spend, this is my 40th year in the industry, mm-hmm. and wow. Everyone has books that they could write about things, when you see things and have stuff happen to you. So we all have stories, and a couple of comedy friends of mine have been suggesting that I write a book. So I'm seriously considering it.
You should. I think I'm going to be honest with you. It needs to be an audible book, though, right? Like, if it's not read by you, then what are we?
I think it needs to be read by, that guy from The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman. Reading the Michael Winslow story.
I can do Morgan Freeman doing me reading it. Yeah. I love that voice. I mean, imagine Morgan Freeman drunk.
Yeah,
and having them read the phone book, and that would be like, I don't give a damn.
I'm sorry, the fact that I couldn't remember Morgan Freeman's voice name is making me laugh. So
I just don't give a damn if you remember me or not. But here I go, I'm gonna get drunk again, and I'm gonna read the damn phone book.
Is there
now, letter A, asshole? The end.
Thank you, Morgan Freeman.
Over your storied career, obviously, we know the big ones, the Spaceballs, the Police Academies and stuff like that. I mean, you've been with Mel Brooks. Yeah, with Mel Brooks. And like I know the Tinseltown can sometimes be a fickle beast. Is there anybody that you're like legit, you've made a lasting friendship with? Like you call up somebody every day, is still your bud that you met in the industry? Like, are you and Steve Guttenberg actually best friends? Does he come to your house? Do you play cornhole?
I hear from Steve every so often. Mm-hmm. And we hear from all the cast members. We hear from Marion Ramsey, Hooks. We hear from Leslie Easterbrook. So, everyone's still around. It's just, we're all doing different things. I haven't spoken to GW lately.
Okay.
I get best wishes from him every so often because he just wrapped up that series a couple years ago called Major Crimes.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah.
Remember he was Lieutenant Ramirez, mm-hmm. I believe, on Major Crimes with Kira. That was Kira Sedgwick, who was in before the previous show, before it spun off, was the closer.
Oh, okay.
Directed by Kevin Bacon.
Ooh.
A lot of the episodes. Did you know that?
I like it. Mm-hmm. Well,
Mrs. Kira Sedgwick, Kevin Bacon.
Of all the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, you're very close, right? Like you don't have to go very far. Like we make the.
I only have to go 2 because of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Ah.
Because Jamie Lee Curtis and I were in Grandview, USA. With Patrick Swayze.
P. Swayze.
That's awesome.
That was the Demolition Derby movie.
Oh, okay. Nice. I haven't seen it.
And there's a lot of stuff that I did that ended up on, we talk about the cutting room floor.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff ended up on the cutting room floor in that movie. And I remember them saying, at the screening, gee,
I really wish we had used the stuff that you had shot, now that I think about it.
Oh, thanks.
It's
another one of those Hollywood stories.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about putting out the title of the book. I think I'm going to call it, because somebody suggested it's called This Schmuck Ain't Funny. And have a couple of like a horse's ass and a donkey's ass and an elephant ass.
Just slowly back right into you.
And I'm like,
that is wild, though, man. Is there anything in your history that you look back and is there like that one job you took you wish you never had? Like you wish I'd never said yes to doing this. I mean, apart from quality time.
Sorry about that. Just readjusting the mic. We all have what we call skeleton movies in our closet.
Uh huh.
And there's a few. There's a few. And you know what? I don't mind. It's the body of work that counts. You know, because I put a lot into it.
Okay. No, you definitely do.
I just want to make sure that the folks, everybody has the opportunity to do this, and everybody can make noises. It's not just noises; it's the body of work. So, you know, I got lucky. You know, one of my first dramatic roles. You know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the first professional acting role I had was a drama, which put me a fish out of water, because all I knew at that point was comedy.
So you were doing To Kill a Mockingbird, but what did you like throw in like as Atticus Fitch? You're like. Like that has
I could not make any noises in the pilot at
all. Oh no, man!
But it was a good pilot. I was able to kind of sneak some stuff in. It was called Nightside. It was with Doug McClure.
Oh,
one of the first times I got to meet Doug McClure and Michael D. Roberts from the TV series Beretta. He was Rooster.
Oh wow!
And it was a nighttime. It was a night shift only TV show. In other words, everything that happens from 2 a.m. to sunrise. Mm-hmm. That was it. Everything, and it was the emergency crew, the ambulance folks. In other words, Nightside. It was scripted. Uh-huh. So this was always like, you know, what happens at night between all the emergency crews. Everything that happens, you know, on a Friday night between 2 a.m. and sunrise. It's all the emergency. It's the police. It's fire. Mm-hmm. It's ambulance. It's hospital. Everybody.
So when you get in to go film this,
we were ambulance claim jumpers. Me and Michael D. Roberts were claim jumpers. We would get an ambulance call. We hear it from the expensive ambulance crew, and we'd show up first with our beat up ass ambulance. See, it was Nightside, man. But see, that was the first pilot.
Was there somebody at that first pilot that they see you and they see a Michael Winslow out there trying to do, you know, drama for all intents and purposes? But you obviously you're cracking people up probably behind the scenes. Did somebody notice that?
It got me on the Gong Show.
Yeah, and that brings you to the Gong Show, which Jeremy is a huge fan of your appearance on the Gong Show. And
thanks to the Gong Show, I got Nightside, and thanks to Nightside, I ended up doing a guesting on The White Shadow.
Oh, I don't even know what The White Shadow is. Jeremy would have to fill me in on that.
That was the high school basketball team kids TV series with Ken Howard as the coach. Clown. It was a drama. It was a TV series drama on CBS.
Okay, wild.
That got me my first Emmy nomination.
Man,
It was called Psyched Out, and it was a drama. Imagine a pre Glee with no music.
Oh wow! So it was Saved by the Bell without.
with no comedy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was a drama. It was a straight up high school drama. There were some comedy moments because Kevin Hooks came from there. It came from that series.
Wow. Nice.
Can I have two questions? A very young
Kevin Hooks.
I have two questions about the Gong Show. Do you still have your guitar, original guitar from the Gong Show?
That disappeared somewhere. In the bowels of Los Angeles.
Do you still have your trophy? Yes.
Oh yeah, it's still at my mom's house.
Is it true that you actually took that winning money and bought a car, and you had to sleep on Venice Beach with that car?
Very true, very true. So I became mobile homeless.
Mobile homeless. That's great.
Mobile homeless because it was helpful too, because you know whenever there was trouble, this time you could really leave.
Oh wow!
you really could get out of the area. At the time, that movie had just come out, The Warriors. I remember that.
Yeah.
So all the Venice gangs decided that they wanted to be one of their favorite warriors. So they would go around terrassing.
And just watch.
Turn over trash cans and messing with the street musicians and the folks that lived on the street.
It's wild.
So that's because that was just what it was.
Yeah.
I just watched the Hervé Villaché movie and how he was also a big star. Well, you know, pun intended. he was sleeping in his car, but of course it was much more comfortable because he's a small man. So
yeah, even though it still sucks in his own way, Mus. You thought I would not understand?
The Hervé Villaché story is a wild one because he was a mean little guy. Like, he used to walk around with a .22 and just threaten to shoot people like he was Yosemite Sam.
You know what? That would have you know, given him a brand new career if he could have done the voice of Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine him in one of those Roger Rabbit type of things where he's Yosemite Sam? That would have been great. Yeah. Would have made a lot of cash.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I have a very bad confession.
Okay.
My very large Facebook group is actually called Midgets Are Awesome.
Yeah.
And I pretty much make it a point to know every little person humanly possible, from Dinklage to Villache.
Yeah.
Do you remember who the other little person was when you played Hendrix in Nice Dreams, other than Tony Cox?
No, I never saw him again. And by the way, you have to remember, when you make a Cheech and Chong movie, there's no script.
Oh, so you got to ham it. I love it.
No, the entire script was all improv. You have to understand that's just how they did things.
Yeah.
I mean, you working with a soda can just sitting in the welfare office.
Yeah, no script. Because cool. Cheech and Tommy didn't use scripts. They would use storyboards, cartoon storyboards of their scenes. And they would just make up the dialogue and just say the whole thing. And by take three, you had it.
Yeah, take us through how Cheech Marin preps you for an improv scene in that film.
Well, they work in tandem, mm-hmm. And Tommy was the director.
Okay.
So he would just basically, okay, take what we're doing, man. Okay, man. This is what we have in our cartoons, man. Okay. All you guys stand over here and you do all this, okay, man? Yeah.
And then we're going to stand over here, we're going to do this, and the camera's just going to roll, okay?
Okay, man.
I like
it's
it.
It's very, very Charlie Chaplin, because that's how Chaplin used to do stuff. I mean, he would have entire sets built and had not a damn clue what he was going to use them for.
I love
who
that.
Chaplin
would do that all the time. He would build sets, and he had no idea what they were going to be for.
Yeah, I love watching old Charlie Chaplin, like some of the and he was great at doing very early special effects too, because he was kind of a pioneer of the genre where he would have something drawn right here, so it looks like he's falling off an edge, but really it's just a regular flat room, and he pioneered a lot of the visual effects that we all enjoy today.
Yeah, and some of the techniques that I saw repeated, taught to everyone else. When I look at the George Lucas book, The Art of Special Effects, the big book, there's some Chaplin techniques in there, where Chaplin would do stuff like he would put the film in the camera backwards. He would put the film in the camera backwards, and then he would do all of his scenes backwards. He would do the entire sequence backwards and then run the film forward.
Mm-hmm. And that gives it that real bizarre look.
For that stuff. Him and Buster Keaton and Ben Turpin also. Yeah, I know Jackie Chan is a fan of Buster Keaton, but Ben Turpin also. These guys would just do crazy stuff. You know that people thought were insane, but it was actually being shot backwards. The scene where Chaplin had just come out of one of those tilt-a-whirls in a funhouse, mm-hmm. and he was stumbling around. And he stumbled over a guy that was chopping wood. And it looked like the guy was about to chop the wood right in front of him. Mm-hmm. He shot that backwards, so he would stumble backwards over the wood block and the axe, so the guy would lift it.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So it looked like the guy was going, and he would step over, like he was almost going to chop, but he did. But they shot the sequence backwards, so as soon as he stepped over it, pull the axe up and go like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that stuff is called The Unknown Chaplain. I think I saw it on PBS like 20 years ago.
It's wild.
But that's the kind of stuff that taught me, you know, how to do stuff with Foley work, with noises. And that's what somehow that got me to do a scene in Back to the Future Part 3. Just me.
Yeah, yeah, you were. So,
I was Michael J. Fox's feet.
Yes, Michael J. Fox's feet in the scene. I guess where he has some
part three.
He does the Michael Jackson.
He has Reebok
right?
pumps on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was in a saloon, and they're looking at him like where's this idiot from? Mm-hmm. And they asked him what his name was. There we go. They asked him what his name was. He goes, "Hey, what?" Looking at his shoes, his Reebok. His pump shoes. Mm-hmm. He goes, "What's your name, boy?" He goes, "Clint Eastwood."
"What in the hell kind of stupid name is that?" "Danced."
So they had him dancing, right? So the scene they had me do was the minute they started shooting at his feet to make him dance, it turns out Michael Fox had beatboxed Billie Jean in the scene. He had done the whole dance sequence, a whole Michael Jackson thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
He beatboxed the whole Billie Jean thing with the whole pirouette and everything. And you could see him doing Billie Jean. You could see him almost singing the Billie Jean on the track. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, you have to do this over. He could do his feet too, because we just finished with the orchestra. We just shot the last scene with the orchestra with the train flying over, and we don't have any time left, and we don't have time to set up a Foley stage. That'll take another hour and a half to 2 hours to set up a whole freaking Foley stage. Can you do this?
Yeah, that's
that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Is that common for you? Like some movie they bring in, they're like, Michael, we need you to fix this for us.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
How many times have you? I did it in 17 minutes. Like that?
And by the way, I put the Billie Jean beatbox soundtrack back in it. I snuck it back in.
We're totally gonna looking out for you, Michael Fox.
Looking out for you, Mr. Spielberg. Looking out for you. You should have put me in Ready Player One.
Yeah.
What the hell kind of moccasins on it? Kneecave?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Man, that's...
So you never know what you learn in the very, 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 very beginning. That skill that you end up picking up someplace else and putting it somewhere else, and suddenly that becomes one of those Jedi Trekkie skills.
Right, right.
So I used to watch Trek back when Shatner had hair.
Right, yeah.
People don't ask Winslow, can you do this? It's how many different ways can you do it?
And if it's really, really difficult stuff, give me an hour or two. I'll figure it out. It's probably an octave problem. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, is there one like impression or sound that is like, that's the one thing you really struggle with? Like, can somebody bring you in and like, can you do this? And you just, is there one sound that you can't crack the code of?
Well, I struggle with all of them. But the main thing that I do is I'll just give me an hour. I'll figure it out.
An hour, huh?
Technology's finally caught up to me.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so
true.
So if I got to go a couple octaves up and I got to space it, I got to compress it, or I got to back it out a little bit. Look, if I got to do some stuff to it, I'll get it.
I like it. You say you need
get it.
You need a Katy Perry song? Give me till noon tomorrow. I'll have you a Katy Perry song.
Yeah, I can do a parody. I can do a Katy Perry song.
Katy Perry song.
I like to think I have the most important question of the day here. And that number one is, have you ever rubbed shoulders with either of these two gentlemen? And the second question is, which one do you think are better? Okay. Dougie Fresh or Darren Robinson?
Have not met either.
There we go. All right. Where did this question come from Jeremy?
Here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. You're gonna ask questions like that. You gotta understand it's about respect. You dig? You can't answer a question about who dug your friend. You know, here's the thing. It's about respect. It's about the community, yo.
Oh gosh.
I was part of hip hop and I was part of beatbox. But that's the thing. I didn't create the wave. I was just part of the ride. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's up. It's about the time, y'all. Wave, yo.
Damn. Oh, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I feel like you turned into Anthony from Fishbone now, so.
Oh, I love their backwards videos too. theirs were outstanding. We're gonna have a good life. That was a great video.
I saw them in the Citadel in DC and actually almost had Anthony in my face while he's doing the Fat Albert theme. So gosh, it was glorious.
Outstanding. Man, but you see, it's those early experiences, man, that teach you. You know, you got to see some stage technique, you know, up there, and you got to see it live in your face. And it's watching how you can make that kind of noise. You know, I got to actually in 78, and one of the things while I was living in my car was I got lucky enough to, I got like I think it was like $28. I was able to save $28 together to see the Police live at the Santa Monica Civic. At the, you know, when they had just come out,
mm-hmm. Rock Band days.
This was like 78, you know, and I saw the Police, you know, at Santa Monica. It's just those three guys, and damn, the amount of noise they made. It inspired me,
and it's crazy because
it,
I always
got me in trouble. Of course, it got me in trouble at the comedy club for doing that shit.
It's crazy because the police were so
I paid for it dearly.
The police were so big back then, and I don't really watch the news, but I heard they were just like, I guess, trying to defund their music. I haven't really been paying attention much to it, but you know,
everybody's gonna have to. Everybody, you know what? If you defund the planet, there is no Earth.
So,
defund the planet, there is no Earth.
Before we talk about this film that you were in called Ginger Clown, I do have one last question. You know, growing up, wow. I mean, I have like as a comedian, like I have my favorite influences. You know, I love Sam Kinison was probably one of my first comedians that I really kind of looked up to. I'm like, that guy does
we
that.
Came
I
up do together.
That. Like, who did Michael Winslow look up to as a kid? And you're like, that's the thing that's what makes me want to do show business. That's it, right?
Well,
I used to
watch all the things on TV, and I used to listen to all the records, you know, because for me it was an auditory experience, you know. So at the same time that Flip Wilson was out, and at the same time that Rowan and Martin's Laugh Hand was out, and at the same time, you know, Charlie's Angels was out. Well, what was, you know, was it at the same time that the Cheech and Chong records were bouncing around, and before Cheech and Chong was called the Fireside Theater.
Yeah, I actually have two Fireside Theater records actually right here. Let me tell you. Hold on, I have.
Oh, he's gonna break him out.
Don't crush that dwarf hammer, the pliers.
So these
are actual album titles.
This is what I got. I got this one right here, which is the In the Next World, You're On Your Own. I have this one.
In the Next World, You're On Your Own.
And then I also have Everything You Know Is Wrong.
Everything You Know Is Wrong. So. That's correct. Everything You Know Is Wrong. And then there's We're All Bozos on This Bus. And there was Waiting for the Electrician or Someone Like Him. That was the very first one. The first one was called Not Insane.
Okay, all right.
And then there was Private Nick Danger, Third Eye.
Yeah, Fireside Chats are pretty. They're pretty fun. They're very much in the same kind of vein as if you ever listen to like National Lampoon style radio.
Oh, very much. They would do
old time like
radio. They would do instead of Sherlock Holmes, they would do Hemlock Stones.
Yes.
And it was the the giant rat of Sumatra with Dr. Flotsam.
I think my favorite bit, and I think it's on in the Next World, You're On Your Own, is they have one bit about it's like a Native American game show, and that it is the funniest one because all you
it's just messed up.
I love it, and it's in today's society, much like you said, like we can't make Blazing Saddles again, like we'll never see
Mel
that.
Brooks
this
said
is
he couldn't, and
there's bits
I,
on
I
that
kept
you'll
trying
never
to tell
hear
him
again.
He could. I said, you know, he was like, there's no way we can't make Blazing Saddles. I said, why not? Because everybody would sue us. I said, well, why don't you just have them in the movie suing you and picketing you while you're making the movie? Don't tempt me. Don't tempt me. That's too much of a good idea.
I'm still waiting for Jews in Space. So.
Yeah,
that's what Spaceballs became, because Laddie wouldn't let him do it. The head of the studio wouldn't let him call it that.
Oh. You know, it's always the studio.
He was going to call
that,
and he said, no. But why can't I? Say, I don't care. But I had a movie where I said, I don't care if you had a movie that said you were going to do that. Well, you can call it anything else. All right, Spaceballs. I don't care. You're not going to call it. Look, you got away with the farting cowboy stuff. Got away with that. You understand? But you are not. You're not going to do this to me.
I got two final questions.
Two final questions.
I assume that any stand-up that you do, you bring your own microphone.
It would be best. You know, at least you have your own germs to infect yourself.
Beautiful. Good.
And yeah. You know, as a vocalist, I take really good care of the microphones because, you know, for years and years and years, you know, because of the shape and what I could do to it, I used to carry a SM57. It was a drum mic that I could concentrate noises on. But after a while, I started messing with AKGs. I started messing with Telefunkens, which is what this one is. God. And I was using also the Shure SM58 betas and then the 57 betas because I saw George Benson using one on Larry King Live one day. But it was a wireless. It was a wireless
Ooh.
SM58 beta mic. I said, what is that? And then I saw Natalie Cole using one.
That's
wireless. That was a custom gold one. And I said, oh, man. So I said, I'm going to check out every microphone ever made. And if I could get my hands on an Aachen head, oh yeah.
Ooh, yeah. It's funny. I've done comedy now for about 10 years. I'm 10 years deep in this weird comedy game, and obviously it's hard during COVID, but also producing comedy shows and stuff like that. I can't stand it when people drop the mic or are ridiculously rough with it, and I can I can tell you, if anybody ever drops a mic like that, that's somebody who's never actually bought a mic before. You understand? Like the level of respect after you've actually had to purchase a mic, you're like, oh no, we treat this very gently.
$497, please.
Yes,
plus tax and replacement fee. Thank you.
Well, anyway, Can we get into this film? So, Quality Time, we usually go over like a film kind of in depth, and
Ginger Clown was a different one.
Ginger Clown 2013.
That was so wrong.
This movie, I don't even.
You saw it, right?
Oh, I watched it in its entirety.
You absorbed this. You had a chance. So, I hope you were having a beer. As the Australians would say, I'm sorry about that. No, I hope you're having a call with. Or are you watching this?
Well, this is such a bizarre film. So it's, I guess it's a Hungarian.
As my friends in the UK, I hope you're having a pint when you're watching that one.
This is a Bulgarian film that's filmed in English. Yes. And it's supposed to
with
be.
Me and Tim Curry.
You, Tim Curry, also Lance Hendrickson, Sean Young, and Brad Dourif.
I didn't even
know
I was in
a
Sean Young movie. So I get to say, yo, man, I'm in a movie with Sean Young. She didn't beat me up, though.
Yeah. So, and I pulled like a little clip. I pulled a little audio clip.
Yeah, don't piss her off.
This movie, like they wrote this movie. It's like if you had explained to aliens how to write a movie, even though they'd never actually seen one, that's kind of like a lot of the dialogue that comes out. So I just did a quick little minute clip of just some of the, I guess these are high school age American teenagers in Hollywood. And I pulled a little bit of dialogue so you can hear
this. Go ahead.
Where
run
to
it.
Go
this is a trip.
And who to go with. But for Christ's sakes, the best deserves a job. He's a zero.
It's not his fault.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Miff, how about we get everybody together and go up to my place? My parents are gone to San Diego for the weekend. The whole house is ours.
Your parents are probably fixing their marriage with some sex in the zoo, banging in the water park, checking out the kangaroos how they do it.
Fucking funny, my feel.
I think it is.
Mommy probably slept with some.
So it's just, it's very, very fun. You know, we are Americans like this.
It's one of those. Almost a propaganda movie, convinced you know what based on TV that we see, this is what we think it is.
Right, this is what the future would have been if Red Dawn happened and the Russians actually won. You understand? Like that's
but we won because we exported hip hop all over the world. So
hell yeah.
Y'all. So when you look at Behind Enemy Lines and you see and you see what was Wilson being. You know, being transported by truck and, you know, by the locals, and they're trying to hide him, you know, from, and Gene Hackman's trying to get him back and everything, and they're hiding him from the locals. And the guy has a Public Enemy shirt on.
Oh, wow.
I love Public Enemy. Fucking cool. And he goes, okay. So, well, we exported our hip hop. Well, thank God they're watching me because thank God.
It said it was in America, but I just kept feeling like I was in one of those countries where we keep sending all of our clothing. So.
Or it was the same editor and a director of photography as The Blob with Steve McQueen.
I will say,
Larry Hagman.
If I can give this movie its props where it deserves it, listen, the cinematography and just the general production value of it is actually really, really good. It was actually, most of it was filmed in an actual theme park in like Eastern Europe. That exists. Yes. So like these sets, you could actually just go and walk through this absolutely horror movie-esque theme park in Bulgaria.
It was a real, they spent the money, they shot it, and I did the voiceover in Scotland.
Oh, that's wild!
Because at the time I happened to have been doing the Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh yeah, I want to go. That is on my bucket list of things to do.
And they got me on one of the off days because I only had one off day in 30. Because remember, if you're going to do the Fringe, you have to do the entire show. You cannot miss. It's 30 consecutive days. and I did it, and I had to do it via a link with a broken translation in the English and Bulgarian, you know, with a link in Scott trying to,
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Could you run the link again, you bastard?
Now, when you're...
Okay, I'm glad to see the link, but I think you got it too. Okay, I'll send it again. I'm waiting, you bastard.
Now, so you obviously did the voiceover work and didn't actually get to go on set, but you are working in tandem with one.
I saw the pictures,
one,
and they were grotesquely scary as hell.
There was you
cool
were,
as hell,
and you are basically you have a lot of lines with Lance Hendrickson. Now, is Lance Hendrickson? Is he in Scotland? Is he somewhere across the globe talking to you? Or are you not hear his
I'm
lines
not sure
at
where,
all?
I think they're actually in Bulgaria, or they might have been in London. But they were interlinked with someone that was in, was it Sophia?
Hey, you're the only one that knows. I think
it was Sophia.
I've only done
one tour through there, and I would love to be able to to tour the Eastern Bloc again, you know, because American stand up, you know, is there. You have to understand that they used to watch. I mean, you can go to Egypt. I've been to Alexandria. I've been to Cairo, where people are trying to stand up in English. I mean, I'm in Hong Kong. They want to do stand up in English, you know. I'm in Sofia. I'm in Bucharest. I'm in, Turkey. Everywhere, people want to do stand up in English because they watched the satellite feed. They saw Joan Rivers. They saw Jay Leno. They saw everybody.
Mm-hmm. So you you play a character called Stomach Crumble in this, which is literally a giant monster with just a stomach for a face.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I could pull up Stomach Crumble here, and we could share it to show everybody here.
Now you can see how bad it is. And I got to be in a movie with Tim Curry, man.
Yeah, this is Tim Curry.
Rocky Horror, but it's a picture show.
Let's see.
He's really sickly after he had a stroke. He's been in a wheelchair, so.
I know. I think I ran into him at one of the Comic-Cons before everything went down.
Weren't you supposed to do a New Jersey Horror Con before everything went down?
We did the Horror Con, but
you and Gutenberg?
Yeah, last year. But we didn't do the one that was about to happen. I don't think we did, but we did the one before everything else happened.
Oh, well,
it was great. I enjoyed it.
I was there. I was the evil clown that was walking around.
That's right. Yeah, we had a good time we had a good time at that thing, and I was messing with people on Facebook, by not saying a word, but just looking at everybody who were looking at me with the masks on, and just looking back at them and looking at the camera, going.
Did you get to see Richard Grieco really drunk and singing with the Crypt Keeper at the karaoke?
No, I would like to have seen that. Hey, eyebrow, hold it down, yo.
There we go. Here's Stomach Crumble. I pulled up for you guys.
Yo, unibrow, hold it down, man. That would have been fun. Let's see, Stomach Crumble. Show me again.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll go and share it. So this is the character that you had here, Stomach Crumble, who is just a literal disembodied stomach on top of a giant monster head here. So, Stomach Crumble.
Yeah, yeah. It's a...
It honestly
a minor antagonist, huh?
I mean, is this the weirdest request you've ever had? Is just like, yeah, we need you to come up with a voice for a disembodied stomach. If you don't mind.
Well, the only thing is crazy is that besides way back in the day being hired, as I talked about in another conversation, besides being hired with Gilbert Gottfried to open for Toots and the Maytals and the Ramones. Yeah. Besides that,
okay, I'm gonna talk to 5,000 kids and tell them laugh at the shit I do. And Winslow's gonna make noises.
Thanks. The Ramones already hate me. It's going to be fun.
All right. Sweet. Hey, what's
meanwhile, I'm trying to do a routine and they're tuning up. That's the thing I liked about the Ramones. I mean, you could do whatever intro you want or whatever you're doing before they come on, but they're in the bit there while you're going, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the hurry up. Kiss my ass, dude. I want a pizza. Okay, great show. I got my money.
So anybody that knows, they redid the Tiki Room at Disney World, so the Iago, the parrot sings a rap.
The Tiki Room. Oh my God, I missed that so bad.
Oh, I didn't know Iago was in there. Who knew?
Man, I feel sorry for anybody that made the mistake of taking anything and going in there.
So now,
get me out of the Tiki Bird. No, my brain is like, it's like Chris Farley. My brain is bleeding.
So of course he sings a little rap that they totally redid the song and yeah, got rid of the old song. So when I met Gilbert Gottfried,
great.
When I met Gilbert Gottfried, I was like, look, make as many jokes as you want about dead Japanese people. Just don't mess with the original song in the Disney World. So,
yeah, because you will get in trouble, man.
Gilbert don't care, man. Gilbert has forged his own way. He's been canceled so many times and come back, and it doesn't even matter anymore. And I love
so
him
that
for
means
that.
There's hope for all of us.
Yeah,
and I would love to do a cartoon or something with that guy, man. Me and him and Samuel Jackson.
Well, here's the thing.
My job with Affleck because of that.
And then have Morgan Freeman trying to kill all of us. I don't care how you find those two little bastards. I want them dead.
Well, that's the thing. I always talk about. I think I've mentioned this before about the idea of cancel culture and like, oh, we need to boycott such and such's live show. And like, what you don't understand is the people who say that, they don't go to shows anyway. So, like, what are you boycotting? Like, I, for instance, I know, you know, wherever you fall on it, the Louis C.K. Situation, he came back and all of his shows are sold out. It hasn't affected. I mean, it affected his FX deal, I'm sure, and everything seems to be
in a cycle. You know, because I remember there was a hate me time before. You know, for me, it happened. But you gotta understand that this seems to happen in a round cycle. I mean, I remember the Lenny Bruce thing. I remember growing up, you know, vaguely hearing, you know, because I was a kid. I remember vaguely hearing about the whole Lenny Bruce thing, and the Supreme Court and the hate and the anger. I remember all that. Because come on, man, I grew up on sometimes on Air Force bases, man. So, so I was, you know, so every time something happened nationally, you know, we got kind of shoved around for it locally. So I understand.
And I think that's what it is. I mean, as a comedian and stuff like that, I mean, that's what people want to hear, what you're not supposed to say as a comedian, no matter what that is, right? So I think the pendulum, as it's right now, I think it's, you know, swung super left. So yeah, when people say
Lenny turned out to be right.
Yeah, and Lenny turned out to be. I mean, if you listen to Lenny Bruce or even George Carlin, for that matter, you listen to him now, and they'd be like, "Well, those guys are monsters. You can't say that."
It was about his right to say it, not necessarily the content. Mm-hmm. He made the content absolutely horrendous on purpose to make the point that the comedy was in it, because he was able to find the comedy in it. And but it was his right to generate the speech. That was what the issue was about.
Right. It is my right every weekend to tell Eric and Jeremy that I shoved an entire pack of Imodium up myself rectally.
That is a true story. And Ashley,
if you saw the movie with Dustin Hoffman, it shed a lot of light on it, though that wasn't the complete story. It never is.
So
the fact that she only charges us $20 to see her do it is a pretty good deal.
Yeah, you see? Now you see, there's the comedy. See, you understand? Now, some places you'd be banned for saying that.
Now, Ashley, so, we've talked about,
and that's what this point was about. That's what the movie Dustin Hoffman, you know, Lenny would help illustrate.
I don't go very well in churches.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely, it's like, I don't always like what someone has to say, but I'll absolutely defend your right to say it.
There you go. Sure. Look at it. Tale now,
and
as
I gotta, understand that is Sam Kinison, you know, and I, you know, mm-hmm. you know, we started out together, and I got a Kinison story for you.
Yeah, if give you me want, a good Kinison story.
You
want to
talk about
yeah.
how you couldn't get away with this now? Mm-hmm. There's no freaking way you can get away with this now.
Mm-hmm.
This was when we were playing the college pubs.
Okay.
This is like the Northridge. I think it was in Northridge University at the Brathskeller. I think it was. And,
all right.
We're talking about. I was just getting into comedy. Sam was starting out. We were starting out. We're talking about 19 somewhere around there.
Okay.
that year, 77.
Somewhere
around there. Yeah. 19 something like that. Sam was my ride, or I was his ride, or something. We had to travel together, and we went to play the Brathskeller, and I had done my set, and I don't know if I just damaged a couple of speakers or not, but I'm sure I pissed off the sound guy. He probably hated me after that because I was doing really weird shit. Uh-huh. Like and then
you?
Sam went up. Yeah, and then Sam went up. Highly experimental stuff. And then Sam went up, and he was going off, and I'm going, damn, I'd never really see him get to this level before. He was there. I think there were some folks from Iran sitting at this table, and he got them so mad. They were ready to kill Sam. They were ready to kill him because they were like, I mean, because he was going, ow, 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 ow. And they're, I was like, oh, man, you don't get me killed, man. You're on my ride home, fool. Stop it.
I like so it that you're not so much concerned about him, but you need to ride home so Sam needs to live through tonight.
They're going to kill anybody that's even near you, Sam. Don't do this, man. So I go to the bathroom, you know, and I come back out, and all the folks in my ran are on the floor rolling. They're on the floor rolling around laughing. They mm-hmm. could not believe they're spit up the drink. Those Iranian guys, they're going, wow. He turned them around by the time I went 30 seconds in the bathroom, washed my hands, and came back. They're on the, actually out of their chairs on the floor laughing because Sam has stopped picking on the Iranian guys and turned to the Pakistani guy. Because he read the room.
He knows it, man. He's
and,
a pro.
And suddenly, and the people behind the bar stopped making their drinks to go. No, actually, they were all the college kids. They were going, dude. Because Sam was saying to the back, don't you remember me, sir? I came into your store, remember? A couple nights ago, I came to the store. I was the one that was going, cigarettes! I want fucking cigarettes!
Oh, these
cigarettes! Oh! That was Sam Kinison's story. That's my Sam Kinison story.
What is it like carpooling with Sam Kinison?
Not really happened. Now, you can go ahead and say it's wrong and everything else, and everybody can get mad at me, but this is based upon a life experience. I'm sorry.
Is there, out of all the things you've done so many things that are in the very much the vein of pop culture and wove into our society at this point, like when you're doing like Spaceballs or Police Academy, like as it's happening, do you think to yourself like, man, this is going to be fucking huge? Or is it just the job? You just go there and this is the work I'm doing today and it just kind of becomes that. Or do you ever step back and you're like, this is going to be fucking huge as you're doing it?
Yeah, well, it's the excitement of being able to do the job. I'm grateful to have the job, but at the same time, I'm terrified because I'm trying to figure out how to get through this in one piece by the end of the damned day.
Yeah, so
without being eaten alive by the pros, but that's how it feels. that's how it feels. I mean, you know, you could be on movie sets and get ready to you know, to shoot. You know, that morning, and suddenly somebody at the studios decided,
we made the writing department do the whole thing over again. So we just wrote these new pages and the entire scene's been rewritten, and here's your thing. And I know you're going to be on set in 45 minutes, but, these are the new additions. Bye.
Can I tell you my movie story?
Yeah, please. This is what we're here for.
It was the end of a major extra shoot on Ladder 49 with Joaquin Phoenix. And, of course, he had already done, you know, like the Happening. No, not The Happening. The other Shyamalan movie where he has, like, a tinfoil on his head. And already done the Gladiator movie.
Yeah, right.
So, I was in downtown Baltimore, and I was ready to cross the street. I finally got kicked out because I'm like a total, you know, stalker Rossi. And a cab driver drives up, and he stops, and he looks around like, "Hey, where are the stars around here?" And of course, Joaquin Phoenix goes, "I am the star," which he didn't recognize Joaquin Phoenix. So.
He goes, "Man, you crazy."
You're not Morgan Freeman. So.
I was looking for that Terminator 2 guy. Who the fuck are you?
I guess that fool got to the chopper already, man.
So that's Baltimore for you. You gotta love Baltimore.
Baltimore, man.
Baltimore, Maryland. Now, Michael, you got some big projects that are coming up. You're about to have a podcast that's going to drop called The Noise Cast. Tell us about that.
Yes, the experimental episodes are up and floating around. I think you can catch them on Spotify, and maybe for a couple more days, maybe on Podbean and some other places. But Noise Cast is a highly experimental thing. It is noise, and mm-hmm. I've cast it as the performers. It is a audio landscape. We're a lot of places, and the lost episode we finally found. It turns out it's me as Captain Noisy Man, and he's just outside planet Xantorix, and he's trying to make his way back to Earth because he found out what was going on here now. So
where can we find your app? Because I couldn't find it on the Play Store.
The app is being, I'm completely rebuilding all the apps. Everything's going to be redesigned. I'm going to roll them out as a series.
Oh, so, very nice.
And it'll help you with things.
And
now I've been studying other people's, you know, apps, and I'm trying to be pragmatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, you can catch Noisecast on Spotify.
How about
Noisecast with a Z?
I'm figuring. Are you on the Cameo yet? Are you getting on the Cameo train? Because I feel like you would rake in some Cameo dough.
We're available. We are available. You got to sneak around, but you can find us.
Okay, so yeah, get a Cameo from Michael Winslow. That'll be big fun.
There'll be some odd things. So, and I would love it if folks would go to www.michaelwinslowstore.com because I'm finally getting into the marketing of it. And understanding that noises can be fun and can be educational. So if you need a noisy man fanny pack with a balls of space, you know, face on there, you can get that. You can get a specialized T-shirt. You can get hoodies. You can get a cyber noise journals. You can get backpacks. You can get all kinds of stuff with noisy.
All that stuff. Now,
we're just learning how to do this, and thank you to Seth for helping me.
Yeah, speaking of Seth, the mad scientist who's quietly in the background. We can't hear him. Just listen. If we don't mention Kicking Durst, we'll probably get in trouble. But yeah, Kicking Durst is a project that I have been involved with. Obviously, Tommy Cimbazzo has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting as the kind of the lead in that show. That's going to be dropping soon. We keep seeing trailers for it. I'm very excited. I actually ended up writing the theme song for Kickin' Durst, which is ended up being a song about, I guess I can't reveal that yet, otherwise Seth will give it to me. But there's a very special surprise.
Think of it as Kelsey Grammer singing that tossed salad and scrambled eggs.
Yes, it's very similar to a Frasier.
From Frasier, which a lot of people didn't know that was Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, no, I definitely knew that was Kelsey Grammer, right from the very start.
I think he actually got a Grammy nomination for doing that stupid song.
I thought it was Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons.
Yeah. See what I mean? You'd be surprised where these little tiny roles, little tiny things can pop up someplace. Like all these years later, Ginger Clown pops up.
There you go.
You see what I mean?
Now
can I tell you my favorite Bobcat Goldthwait joke?
Please.
I'll try to do a lame-ass Goldthwait impersonation. Yeah, you know, when I tell, they say that the guy from Police Academy comes on, I have to explain it's not the guy who makes the funny noises.
Yeah, he does that to me all the time. Very good. That very good impression, by the way. That's very, very good.
But I tried. So.
And I get him back when I do my shows. Hey, everybody. Thank y'all, man. I know y'all think I'm the other guy. Hey, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You might think I'm that other guy, but I'm not.
I'm not the other guy that screamed in the 80s. That's how I
get him back. And I miss him. And Bobcats, he's a great director now. Excellent director.
What did you think about his Robin Williams film where Robin Williams had a kid that strangled himself through autoerotic asphyxiation? So,
I know.
Yeah, Father of the Year. That's a great movie. This really is good.
It's a great movie, and it's one of the last times we saw Robin, you know? I got to say, you know, based upon, you know, my personal experience, I was glad to even to have worked with him on anything, you know, because the last time I saw Robin was... Oh, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. It was me, Robin Williams, Brooke White from American Idol. Yeah. And Terrence Howard.
Yeah.
On the same show. So I got to see Robin then. And he was mellow. He was cool. And it was the last time I saw him. He was always nice to me. Even back in our store days, he was always nice.
Yeah, I've always heard people say nothing but nice things about Robin Williams. Shame. Gone far too soon. So, hey, if you got a friend who's always really funny, just know probably inside they're dying. You need to understand that and be nice to them. Reach out
some
to them
the,
when they don't
the
answer
best
their phone.
Dramatic actors, you know, or folks that are in comedy, they could make the best dramatic actors. I mean, Richard Pryor's life is a drama and a tragedy and an enigma in itself. And you think of all the things that have happened.
Right, right. Yeah, it's wild.
Amazing.
But, hey, Michael, it was awesome having you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us. We didn't do a regular episode per se, but hell, love
the
stories. It was great.
I hope
great.
To see you all again, and I hope I would get a chance to do some things with you all, and maybe do some participation things, you know, together, because... Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity.
Hell yeah.
I want to drive to your house tonight and sleep on your couch.
Yes, Jeremy actually is already outside.
Well, tonight
so.
I'm playing with Finnish death metal again, so I don't think you want to be here that night. I don't think you want to be here tonight.
Well, I'm more into goth metal.
Oh,
really?
Oh, I know how that is, right?
Oh, no. You mean you're into the stuff that goes...
Shut up! I love you! Shut up!
And that's a ballad.
That song is called Ice Fishing in Norway. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know how that sounds in y'all's headphones, but I hope it worked out.
So
now, you are an artist between not only your face and the sounds, and to me, you are a god. So.
Oh, man, thanks.
Well,
you were talking about Michael.
I really hope I get a chance to work with you all again and do some other things. And like I said, I'm working on some new things. Noisecast is coming, and there will be a musical soundtrack from that. I've been recording music for a long time, but I have not released anything until recently. And
what are you playing?
The beatboxes of everything. Everything I can't play, I just do.
But are you a Fender or a Gibson man?
Well, I have a Kramer guitar.
Ah, Kramer's. That's the same that Eddie Van Halen used to play.
Mm. It was a gift from Eddie, so I have a Kramer, and I use that. And
I have a Seinfeld.
I play keys a little bit, but for the most part, I'm learning about the tech, because I put out programs before, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. I'm going to cover some songs. I may go on Zoom and do a show here. I'm trying to figure out what I should do. And I figured out themes. So one night it'll be all Pink Floyd.
One night it'll be all
Zeppelin.
There's only two guitarists that matter in this world. And that's Stanley Jordan and Yngwie Malmsteen. So.
Oh, well then maybe we can jam then.
Hell yeah, brother. Hell yeah.
Because I got a chance to work with the Victor Wooten Trio just recently. I did catch it with Victor Wooten and Dennis Chambers. And I just finished working with John Anderson from Yes on a one of the songs. It's on the new album he has called A Thousand Hands. The song is called Makes Me Happy. And I did a beatboxing on there so you could hear that. And like I said, there will be more things. I'm working with Mr. John Innocent, Mr. Michael Franklin. We're trying to figure out if I can figure out a way to do covers vocally. So he said for me to do Birdland first because it's jazz. I've always been a Quincy fan and a Birdland fan. So I'm going to do that. And then after that, maybe we'll try Frankenstein. Maybe that we'll try Fly Like an Eagle, Steve Miller. Maybe that after that we'll try, you know, we'll try, who knows. From that point, I'll try everything. Even Cypress Hill, man, because I could probably get away with it.
Hell yeah.
Could I get away with that?
Yeah, I think so.
So I could do it as a theme. Every night I could do, like instead of Pink Floyd, it's her cousin, Orange Fred.
Orange Fred.
Renaissance man.
Yeah, exactly. So I could probably cover it. I don't know how I would cover Africa with Toto, but I'll figure it out. There's so many freaking parts that it's just a pain in the ass.
All you need is a Digitech looper.
You know, so I'm working on it.
So cool. Well, I think that's it for quality time this week.
Really?
Ashley, where can people find you at?
Were you talking to me?
Yeah, go. Yes. Ashley, do your plug real quick.
Sorry, you can find me at Ashley Pontius Laughs on my Instagram and my Facebook fan page, and you can find me hosting for Eric August 21st in Hanover.
Yeah, excellent. I'm going to be up there. That's going to be awesome. Obviously, Michael Winslow, you got the store and all that stuff, so check that out. Buy some of his shit right now. Get on there. I need you to buy a backpack.
And like I said, there's more stuff. I'm going to read stories to people with noises. I'm going to do all kinds of weird stuff coming up. And you and Seth know what it is. It's going to be crazy. But everybody get ready. But remember, when in doubt, make noises.
Hell yeah. You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Jeremy, take us out.
You're walking this block. Help me!
I like
good.
That.
Very
that works
good.
For me. I mean, that leaves me no choice but to go.
Inside in the membrane. Inside in the brain. Inside in the membrane. Inside in the brain.
Wow. Yes. Amazing. Amazing.
Inside in the membrane. Inside in the brain.
This is the greatest day of my life.
Thank you for listening and playing with your noise.